The Poetics of Space, Reimagining the Built Environment, by Arden Henley. As the impacts of climate change become more apparent, more frequent, and more intense, will the built environment learn or stand still and mute, awaiting its fate? Will an evolving built environment evoke hope, or its intransigence add to despair? In a beautiful room at the Vancouver Museum, overlooking the Georgia Strait in early spring, Urbanarium gathered architects and city planners to imagine what a climate change responsive built environment in Vancouver could look like. This meeting took place on the unceded traditional and ancestral homelands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations, adjacent to the Squamish Sanaq development. Architects and city planners speak the lingua franca of the built environment, whose intimate effects on us we take for granted, rather than appreciate, as one of the ways our consciousness takes material form and links to the natural world. Architects and city planners translate dreams and stories into the language of pattern and structure, the language of shape and line, form and materials, canals and roads, land use and zones. They are artists who work within the constraints of function and code. Their conversations create, recreate, and maintain our homes, places of work, and whatever sanctuaries we afford ourselves. What changes to the built environment do city planners and architects imagine in response to the impacts of climate change? They do not see an impoverished world, but a different, more local conception of space, more densely inhabited, but at the same time on a more human scale. They see living neighborhoods where arts, public services, and commerce are integrated. Neighborhoods with corner stores and boutique manufacturing sites, centers of art, culture and community, schools and university annexes, health centers and recycling depots. They visualize a restoration of the commons with its conviviality and collective sense of responsibility for the use of the land. Crisscrossing this city of the future, they see walkways, bicycle paths, automated vehicle corridors, and electrified public transportation. Underlying it are gray water recovery systems and cisterns. This much quieter urban space invites birds to sing, coyotes to howl, and the wind to rustle through the leaves of trees. Vancouver is an environment where the intimacy of sea and strand is always present. The shapers of this intimacy envision regions of the shoreline becoming indigenous managed marine parks, with traditional buildings serving as centers of community-based indigenous education. They imagine the return of marshlands, better equipped to absorb the impacts of more aggressive king tides and rising water tables, as well as inviting eelgrass and ducks to return. They see wetlands effortlessly merging into canals lined by trees and gardens, carrying sea levels into the city and off the shore, and serving as yet another form of urban transportation and recreation. Indigenous knowledge guides rewilding of the planted environment. Desalination stations dot the shoreline. This city of the future is not futuristic, but timeless, eschewing uniformity and embracing honky-tonk. Housing is widely varied, with an emphasis on repurposing structures, rather than tearing them down and reusing materials, rather than consigning them to the landfill. Building space is staggered rather than linear. The latest trends in residential buildings resemble the Ottoman houses of Istanbul, with brightly colored front doors like in Dublin. Many streets have become gardens with walkways and bicycle paths. The gardens are sources of local food security and centers of social life where neighbors stop to chat. Street life is vibrant, public, and witnessed by many eyes from infants to the elderly. Each neighborhood manages its own microgrid with spaces in local parks allocated to wind and solar. Patches of brush and forest draw down carbon. As the office culture of the past gives way to neighborhood-based shared workspaces, skyscrapers and parking lots transform into vertical farming sites and food markets. Other downtown buildings become centers of increasingly localized production of dry goods, hardware, and medicines. More and more downtown buildings are repurposed and disassembled. Deserted parking lots become markets and expand into plazas like the agoras of city-states. A loosely linked set of neighborhood-based climate response centers drives this transformation of the built environment, providing the adaptive vision, education, and community development resources necessary for change on the scale demanded by the impacts of the climate crisis. These centers are the hub of many different organizations with expertise and interests in climate change issues, from advocates of cycling to practitioners of environmental law. During climate emergencies, they become cooling centers and sources of refuge. Climate response centers exemplify carbon minimalism, combining the best of sustainable design with intelligent recycling of materials. Recognizing changes in the built environment accompany changes in the social and emotional worlds of people, climate response centers include a range of programs designed to enhance resilience, wellness, and community life. These designers, in the mediums of wood, tile, and steel, in fact, in the mediums of soil and sand, no transition to this new paradigm will be disruptive and stressful, and that solutions will entail breaking many of the current conventions that govern the organization of space, the design of buildings, the deployment of materials, and the use of lands. They know that sometimes change is born of cruel necessity. But it is clear that they have gifts to share, creative ideas in abundance, and willingness to reshape the built environment in ways that fit a zero emissions future and a new time. In the end, they picture a world that is, at the same time, more sustainable and more graciously inhabitable.